Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we thank all of you again for tuning in to our weekly radio broadcast. Tonight, we are going to talk about several things, including, of course, the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. But in talking about the legacy, we're going to also talk about the continuation of the justice piece that is connected to Dr. King. Now, needless to say, there is still a lot of controversy, or not controversy, there's still a lot to be said about the murder, the assassination of Dr. King. And, of course, the observance of that anniversary date was April 4th. Okay, and, you know, there's still, again, a lot of question around why there hasn't been further action in regard to his assassination. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. But also, we're going to talk about, the fact that, of course, there's a national holiday, and that holiday is kind of geared more to the service. Aspect, meaning, you know, all over the country, people do different types of service things in recognition of Dr. King's anniversary, or shall we say a holiday. Well, you know, the question has been raised, and hopefully we'll be getting Brother Sabiki Kambong, because he wrote a very interesting article that I'll bring to your attention shortly. But the bottom line is that there is some real kind of concern as to why there is a more emphasis placed on the justice piece of Dr. King and going more into that. And so, we're going to talk more about that. But now also, we're going to talk about women, our women who played a major role in the development of the civil rights movement, and some of the actions that we are very familiar with that took place during that time period, not only, of course, with Mother Rosa Parks being considered the mother of the civil rights movement, but, you know, oftentimes we don't hear about many of the other women that were very much involved in the civil rights movement. So tonight we're going to talk with Dr. Randy Short, who so graciously reminded me today, and certainly I'm sure some of you, about sisters such as Irene Duncan, okay? And so we're going to talk more again about that. But before we do, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are very, very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Okay, now with that, Duncan, and I should have said Irene, Sister Irene Morgan. My apologies. So let's see. We're going to also give you some updates tonight on some of the developments for the, of course, Million Women March Sweet 16 anniversary reunion celebration that's coming up for October. And the day before the actual mass assembly, we, of course, are holding a rally for justice. And that rally for justice, of course, will be one of the official launchings for the We Charge Genocide campaign. So, again, we're going to be giving you more information about that as well. Okay, now, if you are interested in becoming a coordinator for the Justice for Rally or for the Million Women March 316 reunion mass gathering, please feel free to send us an email at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. And we'll be more than happy to forward to you the information that you need to get on board and become one of our official coordinating volunteers and so forth and so on. So again, make sure you send us that information to nationalmwm@aol.com. All right, let's see. What else do we want to remind you? Also, April 24th here in Philadelphia. Certainly, as usual, every year there is some activity dealing with the continued work to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And certainly this year is no different. Sister Pam Africa should be joining us live on our program for next week to really give you a full overview of what's going to be happening. But, of course, certainly tonight, we're going to give you a little information in terms of what's going to be happening here in Philadelphia for the gathering. There's a rally, of course, but then also there is some other activities that is connected to that as well. Okay, and so we'll certainly be giving you more information about that too. Okay, let's see. We have one other final announcement for you. And let's see, I think that has to do with for May the 11th here in Philadelphia, we'll be holding our annual Enough is Enough rally, and that, of course, entails the national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of African women and girls. And that national campaign we're going to fully release now as a part of our reunion anniversary activity, and certainly we'll be telling you a lot more about that before May the 11th. We always, right the day before Mother's Day, we always hold some kind of activity in recognition of the mother of civilization, but also to make certain that we put an emphasis on the ending of violence, all types of violations as it pertains to our women and girls. This year, our Enough is Enough rally campaign is going to focus specifically on some very key areas. Of course, rape is one. You know, most all also look at the issue of so-called domestic violence. But we're going to also look at something that's happening in our community that we're starting to see a bit more regularly now, and that is known as trafficking. Yes, we're beginning to find that girls in our community are experiencing or being approached any way that deals with this issue of trafficking. And for those who are not familiar with what that is, that tends to be taking girls from one location to another location for the purpose of sexual gratification. And so we are now finding this happening in our community. So we're going to talk more about that and begin to focus more on some of those areas of gender violation. Now, with that said, again, on May the 11th, we will hold our annual rally here in Philadelphia, Enough is Enough. It'll be at the Love Park, which is located at 15th and JFK Boulevard. And, of course, it'll start around 12 o'clock. And we'll be holding also a press briefing and an information session for the community who would want to get involved. Now, this year's theme is called We're Working It Out. Okay, last year we had a hop, skip, run, jump kinds of rallies and activities. We had it here in Philly. We had it also in Newark. And this year we plan to now go to other cities, but this year's theme or focus is called Working It Out, as we now strive towards ending the various violations of our women and girls. We figured that direct action is the way to now do that, and so we're going to work this thing out. But this way, in our way, meaning for the Men Women Movement and the Black Women's Defense League, we're going to hold for this year's rally, and as we proceed in the summer for our awareness pieces, working it out means we're going to do a workout. So for those who come to the session on May 11th, we want you to come with your sweatpants on or your workout outfits and your sneaks, because we're going to do a fitness, we're going to do a workout on that day as well. We're going to do not something too strenuous for you, but something that helps to get us in better shape, that helps to focus more on optimal health and so forth. So this year, again, for May the 11th here in Philadelphia, we'll be at Love Park starting at 12 o'clock noon, and we're going to be working it out, working out the abuse and the violence in our community, working out the mental enslavement that is amongst us, working out knowing how this behavior really came about, and now working to make sure that we move forward in the elimination of it. So with that said, the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violations, which is, of course, all types of violence and abuse, is now underway, and a major kickoff again will be here in Philadelphia on May the 11th. Okay, so that gives you some of the announcements we wanted to give you for this evening. A little later on, I'm going to give you some specifics on what's going on April 24th with the Mumia Abu-Jamal Free Mumia campaign. I'll be giving you the date, the location, and the time, and the other activities that are related to that. And again, thank you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. Okay, we're going to get ready to go to our live line tonight because we have some really powerful dialogue for you tonight. Now, you know, we always talk regularly here at New Day about various things that's relevant to our women and girls. We talk about the history of our women, and, of course, last month was Women's History Month, or what we call Women's Herstory Month. And last month we focused on dynamic sisters such as Fannie Lou Hamer and Ella Baker and so many, many more. Of course, Mother Ida B. Wells. Well, you know, there's so many of our women who you hear little or nothing about. And so one of the things that the Million Women Movement is committed to is making certain that that information is more readily available and that we take on some responsibility to assure that the history of our sisters is also out there and in the forefront, just like other aspects of our history. And so with that said, what we're going to do or have begun doing is establishing the Million Women Movement Historical Preservation Society. Now, what that is, for those who have chapters or thinking about having a chapter or an affiliation with the Million Women Movement, one of the requirements is to have a component that is a historical component. And what it does is it looks at the history of African women in your city, in your state, in your community, and helps us to document some of this on a national level. And ultimately, we will prepare publications that will make certain that information is disseminated appropriately. So tonight, we're going to talk about a sister who I'm so glad when I spoke with this brother, he helped to trigger and remind me of this particular woman. I've heard of her before. I had not really done a lot of research or hadn't done any research about her previously, but once I spoke with this brother, it certainly triggered me to do so, and I'm doing so. And, you know, it helped me to also remember that we've got to be more aggressive. I won't say aggressive, but we've got to be more adamant about making certain that the history of our women is put into proper perspective and shared. And so tonight we're going to talk with Dr. Randy Short, who is going to tell us or talk to us more about a very dynamic sister who I dare say is a front runner, forerunner for many of the things that we do know about pretty well, and that, of course, is the Montgomery bus boycott and what led to that and so forth and so on. Well, tonight we're going to talk with Dr. Randy Short, who is going to give us more insight into Sister Mother Irene Morgan. Okay, now this is kind of the beginning of a segment of what we're going to be talking about in the near future, which is, you know, again, putting the focus and highlighting some of the women of the civil rights era and those who came even before the civil rights era that kind of helped to ignite or stimulate some of what we saw in the 50s and the 60s. And so what we're going to do is we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and what we're going to do at this point is bring in our brother, Dr. Randy Short, and I'm going to have our brother kind of tell you a little about him first, and then we're going to go into our dialogue, which is part one of this dialogue, again, highlighting the work, the legacy, the greatness of African women. I guess I could say we are continuing Women's History Month, this being now April, but it's appropriate especially to talk about this particular sister because her Earth Day is coming up. And so it's a really nice segue, I think, as we continue on into celebrating and observing our women. So without further ado, we're going to go to our live line, and we should have joining us now Dr. Randy Short. Brother Randy, are you on our line with us?
Yes, I am. Ashe, sister.
Ashe. Welcome to
How
New
are you
Day.
I'm fired up. I was in the presence of Tawana Brawley, and I was listening to you standing next to Attorney Alton Maddox, and
All
I just
right.
heard Neola Maddox, so I'm on fire.
I know that's
so
right. Well,
I'm
you
happy
know,
to be
I
on
spoke,
touch with
I
you.
Spoke at the, I spoke at their group last week in New York.
She told me. And I was able to give some words of encouragement to Sister Tawana Brawley, somebody
oh,
who
yes.
Irene Morgan told me that she felt that the movement hadn't succeeded if that young woman couldn't get justice. She was still angry into her 80s. She wanted justice and wasn't tired.
Wow. So you are there at the awards, at the, not awards, but the tribute to Tawana
yeah.
Brawley and her mother. Oh, my
That's
goodness.
Correct.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, before you give us a report on that, what I'd like to do, because for those of our family, listening audience who may not be familiar with you, I just want to share a little bit about you, what you do. You do so much, so I know you can't go into it all, but just share a little bit about the work that you're doing and just, you know, connect a few of the dots just about you, and then we'll go into the report on where you're at presently with Sister Tawana Brawley and her mother and Brother Alton and Sister Leola, and then we'll, of course, go into our main topic for tonight, and that's to talk about Mother Irene Morgan.
All right. Well, I'm going to make it easy by first of all saying I am an African. I am an African who's got a little bit of Native American. I'm a Washington, D.C. native, human rights defender. I'm a Pan-Africanist, a Black nationalist. I'm a graduate of the University of Virginia, Harvard University, and Howard University. My areas of study are history, African studies, and African religions.
Right.
I'm a descendant of Nat Turner, descendant of Black Hawk, the Indian chief who rose up against the people in Ohio Valley. And I work with, principally, I'm a networker with different groups, whether it's Alton Maddox Group, whether it's Cynthia McKinney, whether it's the International Human Rights Association for American Minorities. Many people don't know that Rodney King's case was internationalized by Black international human rights attorneys that almost got the United States prosecuted for racism against African Americans. And there are other groups, and of course there are people like you where we may help out here. I mean, I've worked for Amnesty International. I initiated the Stop the Genocide campaign in Darfur because I was tired of our women being raped and abused. And presently, I am the religious chair for the Dignity of Women's Health Coalition. We are fighting against Depo-Provera. We want it outlawed. We will stop the intended genocide against 200 million African women by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, especially with your audience's help.
All right. So, again, we are connecting the dots. Because, of course, here at New Day, we've been talking for the past 2 years or so about our national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of our women and girls. And this, again, I think is a wonderful, wonderful collaboration that we are about to put together
right.
and really make a difference because, see, unlike other groups, our voice in that arena of what people call gender violence or violence against women, our voice is not really heard very clearly or very loudly, and it's oftentimes represented by other people who don't have really a clue about us. So for now, us to come forward and represent ourselves in both a national and an international way, I think is phenomenal and is really far overdue, well overdue. So this is going to be just incredible and certainly very productive.
That's right. That's right.
So,
it is.
So what we're going to do tonight, because we're going to, in the future, we're going to have many segments dealing with how we're going to proceed and addressing what is literally genocide or
true
genocide. We're going to talk more about that in the very near future and break it down, because, you know, it's one thing to say certain words or certain phrases, but to be able to really present the facts, to be able to really, you know, show step by step in every aspect of it, I think that's what's important, and that's what we're certainly committed to doing. So, family, what we're saying is in the very near future, you're going to hear several segments and several different sessions that will specifically focus on how so-called birth control. Now, remember, we're in a very sophisticated day now, meaning it used to be in order for you to be sterilized, for 9 times out of 10, it would have to be surgically done. Well, not nowadays. And we're going to tell you why we're in danger as African women, both here in the U.S. and, of course, internationally. We're in danger because the enemy definitely wants our numbers reduced. And not only
wants
to reduce, but wants to get rid of us, period, because they don't need us anymore. Okay? So
that's
we need
right.
to be real clear about that. But before we go more into that, we want to talk about the legacy, both of Dr. King, because, again, April 4th did, in fact, mark the assassination of Dr. King, and there's still a lot of question around why there hasn't been more, shall we say, examination into his death and certainly some results from that. But we want to now also talk about women who really launched the civil rights movement. And with
That's
that
right.
said, of course, we want to talk about Mother Irene Morgan. So tell us a little about this dynamic sister, this dynamic black woman.
This incredible black woman was born on April 9th, 1917, and the Waverly section of the great black community of Baltimore in Maryland. She was in a very large family. She was an excellent student in school, but was forced to drop out of school because of the Great Depression to raise money to help take care of the family. And she worked as a domestic, and she was one of the first black women to get into the war industry in the early 1940s as a result of being a part of the March on Washington movement. She ended up getting sick from having an ectopic pregnancy in 1944, and she went down to the family home down in Middlesex County, Virginia, to recuperate. When it was time to go back to see her doctor, she took a bus, sat back according to the Jim Crow policy. Once you got past the third row of seats, people could sit anywhere they want, as long as it wasn't next to a person of a different color. I'm emphasizing that because she wasn't trying to integrate. She had no real interest in being around people that didn't care about her. She was a Garveyite. The family liked Garvey. They liked A. Philip Randolph. And they weren't big on the NAACP and integration. They basically wanted theirs. So very independent people. On the bus, sitting next to a black mother with a very small baby, as the bus filled up and they reached a point near Saluda, Virginia, some whites got on. And, of course, Miss Morgan, suffering from internal bleeding, and the woman with the small baby were told they need to give their seats up to white people. And Morgan wasn't having it. Morgan told the bus driver, first she told the woman, how are you going to hold this baby and stand up as the bus goes? Stay down. We're in our right seats. We didn't ask to sit next to them, and they're not going to take the seats. They set the rules. They're not going to change it to inconvenience us now.
Oh, right.
The bus driver, if you know anything about Virginia law, the bus drivers had police power in Virginia then, which means they carried guns and they had the right to kill people. She didn't care. She told the bus driver she wouldn't obey him. He threatened to have her arrested. And she said, you can arrest me, but you white men better not touch me. And the bus driver drove them to a police station, and a policeman got on, handed her a warrant. She snatched it from him, threw it out the window of the bus. The bus driver grabbed her, and she got up and kicked him multiple times in the groin so severely that he almost lost consciousness, had to crawl off the bus. The next police officer, she believes, was a mechanic who was deputized for no other reason than to abuse her, because she mentioned that he had motor oil on his face. And the reason she mentioned the motor oil, she was thinking about biting his face off, but didn't want it in her mouth, the flavor. So instead, when the next guy came in and grabbed her, she proceeded to cleave his face, his scalp, all the way down to his waist. She made him into a bloody pulp, beating him, scratching him, tearing him. So there's like a two-minute struggle on the bus before he could get her off. Once he got her off the bus, he told her, "I'm going to beat in your nigger head." And she told him, "No, I'm going to beat in your head. Try me." So after that, he realized that she had done all that. She had a good chance of getting that club and beating him with it. And she was put in jail, bailed out because her father, her grandfather down there was a man by the name of Mr. Tapp. He was a black man, very prominent in the community. The black community rallied to get her out of jail. When the word of this arrest went around, it reached the NAACP up in New York. What they had thought she'd be charged with was resisting arrest, but instead they charged her with violating the state's Jim Crow statute for sitting on a bus. Because they didn't charge her with resisting arrest, they didn't have a case. The people were so impressed by this woman who beat the police, didn't care, was willing to travel unassisted to Virginia to any court to tell folks she wouldn't pay the $10 fine that they wanted her to pay, that William Hastie, then the governor of the Virgin Islands, took a leave of his job to represent her when her case got to the Supreme Court. Initially, she was represented by the famed lawyer Spotswood Robinson from Richmond, Virginia. Of course, she lost in court initially and, of course, had that $10 fine, which she refused to pay. She told the judge she wouldn't pay. There was no payment plan that she was willing to pay to dignify Jim Crow, because they told her, you know, $10 may be a lot. You can pay 5 cents a week or pay us a dollar a month. And she told them, try no dollars a month for never. So her case went to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals ruled against her. At that point, her team went from Spotswood Robinson to Thurgood Marshall and William Hastie. Of course, this event, the fight took place on July 16, 1944. The Supreme Court handed down its decision in March of 1946. It was the first Supreme Court case in which the high court ruled that separate and unequal was unconstitutional.
Wow.
And this opened the door for all of the Jim Crow cases, including Brown, because of Morgan. It was called the Morgan Doctrine. The Morgan Doctrine is the foundation for the Freedom Rides. There were two sets of Freedom Rides. Mrs. Morgan was so fearless that Bayard Rustin, Douglas Wilder became a lawyer behind her case. And the first Freedom Rides happened in 1946. There were black people all over the country fighting, because what the Morgan decision said was you could segregate within your state, but you couldn't demand segregation across state lines. So she changed the whole business of transportation. And
wow,
that wasn't just for buses. It's for planes. It's for trains. And in 1961, when the Freedom Rides began, James Farmer, who had been a part of the Freedom Rides to test whether the courts would support the Morgan decision, this is where Stokely Carmichael, Martin Luther King, John Lewis, Diane Nash, James Bevel, C.T. Vivian, you name them, all were walking in the shadows of this woman who wouldn't pay a $10 fine and call it a day.
Wow.
And she paid for it. They destroyed her family. She ended up having nowhere to live. She moved to New York. She staged a sit-in in the mayor's office and demanded housing and got it.
Unbelievable.
And she had two children, Sherwood and Brenda. And she married again a Caribbean man whose name is Kirkcaldy. And what's very interesting about her is that she was involved in demanding justice in Baltimore, not to be seen. In fact, the thing about her, when I would ask her why to do it, she said it was the right thing to do. I'd do it again. I don't care what they do to me. We have to stand up. I don't want anything. In fact, it took a whole lot of prodding for me to get her to come forward to be honored. She figured everybody's supposed to fight this thing, whether you get paid or recognized at all. It's evil. When you don't do evil, do you need a prize or you need a paycheck to be righteous?
Wow.
And she was such a phenomenal woman. She returned to school in her 70s. She earned her last degree. She wanted to get a doctor. She earned her master's degree from St. John's University. I believe she was 70, 76 or 78 years old. Had her husband not gotten sick, she would have probably earned her doctorate at the age of 84.
Wow.
Her greatest commitment was that we have to do something for our young people. Our young people is all we have. And she was a person that with this kind of woman, she's so wonderful. On Thanksgiving, she would go out and buy as much food as she could and bring in anybody she thought was hungry to feed them, buy them clothes.
Wow.
She would collect dolls. She had a doll collection of hundreds of dolls from all over the world and use the dolls to teach the children the opposite of the doll test for Kenneth and Mamie Clark, that all of us are in the image of God and we should respect each other's culture. And I get fired up when I think about her, because there's so many people who call themselves leaders in our community that need to be the center of attention. They need millions of dollars and jets and press conferences. And yet you have a person that sacrificed everything, that was reluctant to even ask for people to know their name.
Wow. You know,
and that's
once
the beauty
again
of our black women, our black mothers, our black grandmothers. That's what we black men in particular, we're fighting for people like you and her. When we look around and we get discouraged, we're fighting for the purity of heart and soul and sisters like that.
I'm so very happy that you really, you know, brought this to my attention and certainly are bringing it out into the forefront, because we've got to correct some of the negligence that we have allowed ourselves to be a part of when it comes to history and the legacy of our women. I mean, it's just incredible in this day and age, with all this technology and all this access to other kinds of things, that not enough attention or not enough whatever has been placed in that area. We do so many things. And as I think you said earlier, or at least we talked about earlier, black women help everybody, have historically always helped and supported everyone. But yet we cannot get our rightful place.
That's right. It's not enough respect, not enough understanding that if you have a resource, in fact, black women are the ultimate resource. There's no greater resource, not gold, not diamonds, not platinum, than our women, because they're the only ones that can really produce a holy African person. Okay, civilization, humanity comes out of the black woman. If you get rid of her, you don't have humanity anymore. Just that simple.
Wow. Well, it goes without saying, but what we now know is there is a major attempt to get rid of us, because they now have this thing down so that, first of all, this integration thing has gotten to the point now that they feel, you know, they're able to put non-melanated women with black men and therefore are able to continue some form of production. But the original black woman, they are now attempting to get us out the way. And let's go into our next segment. We're talking about that, how this thing of birth control is now being pushed in such a way that people are not realizing that sterilization and other kinds of health issues are now related to this so-called birth control thing. So let's
yes.
talk a little about that, my brother. Let's talk about one of the go ahead.
You know, let's just start off with the Republic, because we couldn't get, or not we, those people couldn't even agree to ratify the Constitution of the United States until the question was answered, how do we cut down on the numbers of black people? Let's remember that. You had a deadlock at the Constitutional Convention. What do we do about black people?
That's right.
And what came out of that was the agreement that no more Africans would be brought to this country after 1808. So we didn't even have a republic until they agreed to reduce the number of black people. We just start right there. And there were talks, if you've ever read Thomas Jefferson, supposedly the wisest, most intelligent, cultivated man produced by America, even though he's a child molester and a racist and a eugenicist, in his book, Notes on the State of Virginia, he implies that blacks should either be sent back to Africa or wiped out.
That's right.
He's the wisest, right?
That's
so
right.
So this issue of wiping us out or cutting us down, and he even had a little nasty comment that black women like having intercourse with orangutans. That's right there in the book, Thomas Jefferson. So there is an issue about the fecundity of black women even coming over on the ships from the very get-go, that there was something special, to the point where when white men had venereal disease, they were told have sex with a black virgin, and that would take the disease out of the white man's body. So that's eugenics.
And you know, on that note, my brother, you know there are still some practices of that?
Yes. And we picked up their habit. We black men seem to copy the worst in white men towards our sisters. It's insane. It's uncalled for. All we have is each other. Got to do better than this. So let me move on. And of course,
yes.
Cotton boomed, and then we had something else happen. Once slavery became even more profitable, then they had breeding. I had family that was on a breeding plantation outside of Gastonia, North Carolina, folks being bred like animals. A black woman uses machines, baby machines. They even had specialty breeding for quadroons and octoroons and places like Mobile and Charleston and New Orleans. But when slavery ended, when the enslavement of our people ended, they wanted to cut down on our numbers. And you see, there's something that we need to touch back. You're back in Philly. I need to say this. Right over in New Jersey at Princeton, they had a thing called the Providential Design. And one of the things the Providential Design taught was that if black people were ever freed in America, they would outproduce white people in numbers and take over the country. So blacks needed to be sent to Africa or kept in slavery, and those free eliminated. And out of this, in fact, the building I was in for the Alton Maddox's honor of the Brawley family was 1816 12th Street. 1816 was the year that they started the American Colonization Society, based on the Providential Design, that black folks were morally depraved, they were wicked, they were dirty, they carried venereal disease, and they were destroyers of civilization. And only when you sent them to Africa would they become decent again. So you have that going on. And when slavery ended, there were all these speculations about our numbers dying off. And what many people do not know is the years following and during towards the end of the Civil War, tens of thousands of blacks were killed, as many as 30,000 or more. Mm. Who would be keeping records? All these Confederate soldiers mad, shooting, killing, Union soldiers shooting, killing, and police shoot and kill now with the camera
on them.
What do you think was happening to the so-called contraband back then? We had the Fort Pillow massacre right there in Tennessee. They had the Ku Klux Klan march the other day to honor Nathaniel Bedford Forrest, who massacred black women and babies, and they have memorials to him and a national park in Tennessee. God have mercy. So with these free people, the 5 or 6 or 7 million black people, they wanted to do something. And that intensifies once you'll find that, in particular, people like Maria Stewart, Harriet Tubman, Jerina Lee, Frederick Douglass, Alexander Crummell, those black abolitionists who were able to defeat white post-slavery thought, where they were able to out-argue the Bible to white folk went into science. And in science, you have Darwin and his cousin Francis Galton, who basically designated black folks as subhuman. There's a wonderful film, and if you don't have a copy, I'm going to get you one, called Myopia 21.
Oh, yes, I have it, have seen it, have shown it, absolutely.
And it does a wonderful job. Now, then out of all of this emerges one of the most wicked, sinister, despicable human beings by the name of Margaret Sanger, with an anointing from hell and a hatred in her heart for black women. She has a book called American Women and the New Race, and she implies that black women shouldn't even be allowed to have children.
Mm-hmm.
In the 30s, she created the Negro Project, where black crooked politicians and fake, pardon my language, nigger preachers would take bribes from population and genocide people, and they would get rewarded to wipe out black people. And from the American Birth Control League, you got Planned Parenthood. One of its board members was William Gates Sr., Bill Gates, the little ugly albino-looking one with the crazy wife named Melinda. They wanted blacks wiped out. And now the son, who's like the fruit that doesn't fall far from the tree, they have invested in Depo Provera, the most deadly hormonal birth control on the planet. The FDA calls it carcinogenic. It has been used and experimented on black women since the 1950s. They killed thousands of black women in the state of Georgia, again with experiments starting in 1967. As recently as 2010, they killed hundreds, not thousands, of black women in Ghana with Depo Provera. They know that it contributes. It makes you maybe as much as 10 times more likely to contract HIV/AIDS. It gives you diabetes, high blood pressure, stroke, blood clots, mood alteration, osteoporosis. And God, I've left some stuff out. It strips your linings of your womb where you're either sterilized or not able to carry a baby. And it does other things. They know it. They know it kills. Initially, whites used it for a little bit, then they pulled it off. And now, black women, who are maybe 15% of the American female population, use almost 90% of the drug in this country. I have the studies to prove it. I can introduce you to a gentleman. They found wherever Depo Provera is used in large numbers, you have high cases of HIV and AIDS, hepatitis C, syphilis, things that we thought were gone, and they know it. Bill and Melinda Gates have done studies where they know this. And you know what their response was to raise $3 billion to put this all over Africa. It's genocide. And forgive me if I get emotional. I just can't imagine 200 million. Do you understand? The brother who we were talking to, I can't tell you his name, says that a minimum of 10% of all HIV infection and contraction is a result of Depo Provera use. That's a low number. If it's 20%, that means in Africa every year, close to 2 million women will get, or men will get HIV and AIDS because someone was using Depo Provera, which means that maybe 20 or 30% of the black people in the United States have HIV AIDS as a result of Depo Provera. And then they made it seem, and forgive me for getting angry about it, that there was something dirty or wicked or immoral about our women.
Mm-hmm.
When they could do something like this, how dare someone speak against our sisters?
You know, brother, there was a report recently that came by way of the BBC that said 25% of the women, of the girls in South Africa was HIV.
And you know what the rate of Depo-Provera use is in South Africa? About 25%. I have a little sheet here, and I can read for Swaziland and everywhere. You have these high sky high rates of HIV/AIDS. You have sky high rates of Depo-Provera use. How could that be an accident?
Right.
They know it. They've studied it. And their response with the World Health Organization is to use it even more on black women.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, population control is something that so-called powers that be is very interested in, especially given the fact that, as we indicated earlier and as we've talked about on other shows, is that, you know, these people are inclined to believe that their population is declining, and they have to do something about that. And so now there are ways, obviously, that have been developed to do that.
Mm-hmm. And they want to take Africa's land. The white man's system is falling. It's already in the toilet. In fact, you may have to put some gloves on and reach what they put down the toilet and to get it out. Okay? They're taking land. They want to depopulate Africa. You know, Reverend Walter Fauntroy, who worked with Dr. King, has a little map where he showed the plans they had to wipe out Africans and put them on little reservations like Indians with super highways for white folks, just like what they do in the communities here. They call it urban renewal, and I guess they'll call it African renewal, and they'll push us out and take everything. And, you know, there's a rock in the way of white supremacy, and it's called black women, and we've got to defend that rock.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is why our upcoming justice rally, you know, Rally for Justice, this is why for October 25th, which is the actual anniversary date of the New York March, this will indicate to people what we're really about, standing up for what we know, right, standing up to make certain that the continued work of our ancestors is brought forward in the way that it needs to be in this day and age. So, you know, we talked about this, I think, the other day, Brother Andy, is that this time period that we're in right now is a very important, a very significant time period, and we're going to seize the time.
All right. I want to mention one more thing to you, because I want you to be a part, and I'm going to ask you on air. I work with an informal group called the Dignity of Women's Health Coalition, and what I wanted to do was have a partner group called A Million Women Against Depo-Provera. I'd like for you to be here. You don't have to do much other than lend your name. We have a report coming out where I can prove that these racist Khazar Zionists have worked to end the use of Depo-Provera among Jews, especially black Jews, while fighting against education campaigns for African women in the United States and the rest of the world. So if you understand why I call the NAACP, the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People, and they have Rabbi Saperstein on the board, and the woman's name is Shira Saperstein. She's behind suppressing the information we found to show that they're trying to kill all the black women that they can. We don't need coalitions like that. I need you. I don't need somebody with some hummus and a bagel if they want to sterilize my sisters. I don't need them.
All right. Well, I will say this, and you know, I'm sure you'll give me more information about the
sure.
group or the coalition that you just mentioned. But see, I don't lend my name to anything that I'm not directly involved in. That's number one. Okay.
Please come and help. I need you. I'm new at this. You've been doing this a long time. I came in because I saw and I found out what it's done to women in my family, and I can't sit on the sidelines and let them ravage our sisters. Now, you've been doing it longer. Leave me, I'll follow. I have no problems with you being the Yah Santois on this, as long as we get it no longer injected into the bodies of our sisters.
All right, and that's the other point that
survival.
I was... That's the other point I was going to make, too, is that as long as it's for and about African women here in the U.S. or throughout the diaspora, then I'm definitely inclined to be involved.
Ashe, I love it. Save our sisters. We got to stop
right.
them. I mean, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. We are going to do it. We will not fail.
Wow.
Irene Morgan's not going to let me fail. And another one I'm going to tell you, her name is Jewel Mazik, this black woman who advised all the African heads of state. Jewel Mazik was Malcolm X's advisor on Africa, the sister that was teaching Malcolm about African liberation.
Mm.
She's so, you know, Jewel's not going to let me fail. Okay, we're not going to fail.
Wonderful. Well, again, this is a wonderful time to bring this not only information forward, but now to bring forward the actions. And that's what's
yes.
so very important. You know, we do a lot of dialoguing and a lot of research and a lot of this and that. But when you look at, well, what's the plan of action? What are the strategies that are going to make this stuff really happen and manifest? That's where it seems to kind of fall short at. So it's wonderful now that we have literally action steps, strategies, and so forth, and are preparing now to take this information into the UN. Of course, we have from time before Brother Paul Robeson. We've had, of course, Malcolm X and Queen Mother Moore, who have introduced these ideas and kinds of concerns into the United Nations. Well, here we are now in the 21st century, and it's such a wonderful honor to be one of the first groups, one of the first entities to, in this generation, to now declare genocide. That we're saying
yeah.
we declare genocide, and we're here now to make certain that not only reparations is obtained as a result, but also retribution.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We need it.
Absolutely.
Necessary.
Absolutely. Because we talk about healing, Brother Randy, but, you know, when you ask someone, well, how do we heal? What is going to make that happen? How does that – what's going to bring that about? Well, these are some of the steps. These are some of the steps that we feel will not only bring about repair, but, as I said, healing.
I'm listening. Come on, talk to me.
Well, brother, it sounds like you're in transit, and look, I do that all the time. I do interviews quite often while I'm in transit because sometimes that's how we got to do it. So I really appreciate you taking this time. What I'm going to do right now is to see if any of our callers have any quick questions or anything that you might want
to
convey.
I'm a block from my house, so I'm
okay,
fine.
Wonderful.
I'm just coming up
okay.
again.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I'm gonna open up the line, and family, if you have a comment or a question that you have at this time, press 1, please, so that I know that you would like to be heard. We're talking about several things, certainly, and listen, we welcome your comments or your questions. It's an incredible thing that we are preparing to do to bring about awareness, education, and also training so that we now have proper advocates and activists, not only in our communities, but in the circles that we need to now make certain we're represented. You know, I don't know of any black women lobbyists, especially those that are culturally and historically inclined. And this, too, is an area that we now have got to make certain we bring it forward because we have to do the work on various levels. That includes making certain that different laws can now go into effect. They just recently passed a law here in Philadelphia where it's, I don't know if it's actually passed yet, but they certainly introduced it through city council, where if you commit a crime, a so-called crime, if you are in Islamic Guard. Now, how that came out was, it was a young girl, Brother Randy, back in, I believe, January or February, 5 years old. She was abducted from a public school here in Philadelphia. She was taken, raped, sodomized. They found her several hours later in the rain in a T-shirt. And how this little girl was obtained, someone went into the school dressed in Islamic garb, a female, and brought her out of the school. They had it on video. So now they're trying to pass a law that says it's illegal for you to commit a crime while dressed in religious garb. Well, that's all good, but see, that's not addressing the real problem.
Right.
It kind of is a distraction, you see, mm-hmm. because the fact of the matter is, from what we are being told on the street, that this little girl was to be, as several others have been, put into the trafficking ring.
Uh-huh. Mm. I want to let you know, the Depo Provera project that I'm doing is in conjunction with the Rebecca Project, which fights against trafficking and young women. And so I would love to link you up, so there's something here in Washington, D.C., and the director of it, her name is Imani Walker Lobbies. Imani Walker will fight, and I'm certain she'd receive you like a sister. So you got some support. I just need to put y'all together.
Wonderful. And that's what we've been working on for these past 16 years, is to get those sisters who are really about it to connect with us. See, the Men and Women March is historic, and therefore we have not only established a place in history as far as Black history or African history, but and women's history, but also world history. And therefore,
that's right.
You know, we need for our sisters to connect to that legacy too, because we hold that place in history. So, you know, we've been trying to get sisters from the various different organizations and groups nationwide to connect with us and I with them. And I think this year we're going to really be more successful and more productive in doing that. So I certainly look forward to meeting her.
Wonderful. Look, I'm going to put that in motion. I will send you Kwame's email. Tell Kwame what I want. And we go for it, because everybody's impressed by you that I know. I mean, it's not so much you, it's what's inside and who's working through you, because to get the things done that you've done, I mean, not nationally known the way some other people are, it has to be God himself, God herself, and whoever else God is working through you to get these things done, especially
right.
at this point in time. So I believe that.
Thanks. Good thanks. Well, I know that there's definitely, you know, a spirit of our ancestors that has been kind of placed into me, needless to say, and you know, I cannot fail. In fact, I remember when you mentioned Baba Kwame, I remember how he used to often say, we must not fail our ancestors.
That's right. We can't fail. We
That's
can't
right.
fail. And we'll do better than not fail. We're going to exceed what they've asked us to do.
Absolutely.
And the extra will be invested in those coming, those yet
Absolutely.
Born that are going to take our place.
Absolutely.
So we have those that have gone before and those coming. And so we have to work double time, even if we get part-time
pay. No doubt about it. All right, my brother. Well, before we let you go, please kind of give us a little report or insight into how tonight's program went with
it was
Tawana
wonderful.
Brawley.
Yes. Well, first of all, you know Alton Maddox Group, the United African Movement, they have an annual trip down to go to the Great Blacks and Wax Museum in Baltimore. And I think the
yes.
brother's name is Browder, who shows
yes,
people
Tony,
all
Dr.
the
Tony
African,
Browder. Yes.
He shows them all of the monuments and statues and things that show the influence of ancient Kemet on the creation of Washington, D.C. And at the end of that, they came to the Thurgood Marshall Center,
mm-hmm.
which is a place, in fact, it was like a hotel. And Langston Hughes stayed there when he couldn't go to, you know, white hotels. And
right.
they had a film, a wonderful film, showing how the whole thing that we've been told by the white media about Tawana Brawley is a lie. And I told Tawana
wow.
Brawley to her face, even if she hadn't told the truth, they've done it so much anyway, I'm on her side anyhow. And that
mm-hmm,
includes the woman
mm-hmm.
down in Louisiana. You can't come and tell me nothing about my women. We know our women.
That's right.
So we had about, I'd say, up to 100 people watch the film. And then Brother Maddox came and spoke. And then they had the Brawley family come up to be recognized. Tawana's mother spoke. And then we took a collection. I can tell you how much money because I saw the envelope. They raised over $1,200
wow.
to give to Tawana
All right.
to defray
All right.
what this little rapist, Pagonis, who's got her working more or less as a slave, a concubine slave, where she has to pay him so many hundreds of dollars every 2 weeks because he raped her. And part of the discussion was we have to overturn legitimate rape. Because there's no
right.
case in history
right.
that I'm aware of where a black woman has successfully had a white man convicted for raping her.
Right. That's right.
After that, a couple of us spoke. I spoke. I raised the issue of Depo Provera. I also
mm-hmm.
raised the issue that we have to fight to defend our women. And even if they kill us, well, I mean, if our women are dead, I'm dead anyway.
That's
so
right.
I'd rather go out fighting than for it to sneak up and one day realize, God, there are no more girls anymore. What happened? So we had that, and then we just traded emails. And when I called in to you initially, I was standing right next to Attorney Maddox for power. And then they got
oh,
on
right.
the bus, and I just walked from 12th Street all the way back to 3rd Street, and I'm at my front door with my keys in my hand.
All right. I love it. Well, brother, I will be returning back to D.C. very soon. I'm looking forward to meeting with you because we got to sit down and really map out some of these next step strategies. Of course,
yeah.
I'm inviting you to be on one of our committees, well, on several, but particularly we have a component of MWM, of our movement, that's known as Brothers in Support. It's our brotherhood segment or brotherhood unit of Million Women Movement, and I want you to be involved in that on a national level because, with you know, we, even though the Million Women Movement is focused primarily on dealing and addressing the issues of our women and girls, of course, our whole family, community, and nations are extremely important to us, and we are focused on doing work that's relevant in those areas as well. So we, you know, we have to have a brother component to us to keep it, as I talked to you earlier today, about being balanced. And that's the kind mm-hmm. of perspective that we work from, that meiotic perspective of being, you know, in harmony and in balance. So I'll be sending you more information about our Brothers in Support. And with that, there's a component called Brothers Against Rape, BAR.
Well, it's important. We need to stop, and in fact, we have to correct ourselves. If we respect and live nonviolent lives, even if the sister's out of control, if you ain't control, walk away. You
That's
follow
right.
what I'm saying? And it's
That's
not
right.
about sex. If you don't feel powerful, raping a woman isn't going to make you more powerful. It's going to make you weaker. And it's going to make people like me want to see them strung up. I don't care. I don't even care what she did. You follow what I'm saying? So, yes, we
Absolutely.
Need to be in solidarity, acting, and also policing us because there's a lot of stuff that goes on. A sister should be able to walk down the street without having her anatomy described and put on blast.
Absolutely.
It's ridiculous. It's outrageous.
And speaking
and
of that, on previous programs, we've talked about, of course, that person known as Lil Wayne, who took
yeah.
his lyric and decided that he would, I almost don't even want to talk about it.
No, but you know what? Didn't something deal with him? You know what?
Yes.
For all we know, Mimi Till mixed up that last syrup drink he had. He needs to watch what he said.
You know, I put the article out on that and titled it, "Is This the Chickens Coming Home to Roost?"
Yes. And if it's not the chickens, it's something. No, we've got to, and you see, there's something else going on, and I'm going to say this and I'm going to leave it alone. We're under attack by forces that know what they're doing, and I sort of fault the churches. I fault the churches, the Christian church in particular. I'd share with you why, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We live in a nation where we use this term Judeo-Christian, and I think it's a bad choice of words. Because most Jews that are practicing don't want anything to do with Christians. And most Jews that are practicing follow the Talmud. The Talmud is anti-black, it's anti-Jesus, it's anti-everybody that's not Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if those people that are Talmudic control music, radio, television, mm-hmm. and film, and they believe that folks are animals and everybody's whores, and if mm-hmm. you look at who's pushing the gay movement, it's the same group of Talmudic people. When we call those folks blessed and chosen of God, what kind of chaos does that communicate to our people? Who, you know, I mean, I had a debate with someone. They were incapable of finding fault with the massacre of Palestinians, or the organ harvesting in Haiti, or the diamonds being taken from Congo, and they keep telling me that they're blessed. Well, what am I? Aren't we blessed too? Right?
Mm.
If it were just redneck Anglos doing this in the music and in the culture, we would call it racist. When other people do we can't have this discussion because you can't talk about people because it's anti-Semite. But I need to tell you, I'm Hausa Fulani. I'm a Semite, and they are Khazar. And so we've got this Khazarian curse hanging over our people in culture and in religion. And
mm-hmm.
people are going to have to start being honest about actually knowing what religion you're in. You know how folk want you to become a Christian, come to church, and be as dumb as them? And you know the difference between a Khazar and a Jew? And that person's trying to tell you that the people killing folks in the West Bank are blessed, and they're the chosen ones, and they're killing us. What does that say? It says self-destruction is blessed by God. These Negro preachers like that Eddie Long, boy molester, and Creflo Dollar, these people who are putting this garbage out here basically saying God wants us to be violated and used.
Mm-hmm.
It's his will. Do you follow what I'm saying? Now, if you and I put
Absolutely.
Out really nasty and vulgar stuff, we would be attacked. But put a yarmulke on someone's head, and all of a sudden, nobody can criticize it. You've got, I call a Shaka Khan performing for the Israeli Defense Force. And I called him Stevie Blunder when he was trying. We all on the internet attacking Stevie. It's interesting. So when we see our young people doing all this stupid stuff, someone's paying them. Who hooks them on the drugs once they get famous? Okay, and it sounds like I don't like anyone. I'm lamenting the drug usage, if you notice. I'm not attacking whole peoples or cultures, but I'm looking at the violation of my people. It's being done systematically by someone else, and we should be able to have this discussion. And we need to get these people out of our culture, out of our way, and to stop stealing from us. I mean, most people don't know. We complain, but, you know, Elvis Presley, who's given credit for creating rock and roll, is Jewish, through his mother. It's just another constant cultural theft, the one thing we do produce that we could make money off of, and it's being stolen by middlemen, and the middlemen keep being the same, but we can't say that because, you know, some white folk in Europe did something to them. Okay, now they're over in Africa and South Africa making money off the diamonds. They're everywhere making money hurting us, right? Not to mention the vice president of the Confederacy, who was Judah P. Benjamin, and that the American pro-slavery revolution was funded by Haim Salomon. Okay, we can't talk about that, but that is a problem. This is a major problem, and we must, and they're the ones that have the culture. We must take our culture out of the hands of the phonies. Okay,
that's
I don't
right.
mind the folk in Dimona, they legitimate. I don't mind the Falasha, they legitimate.
Yes.
But the Khazars, and wherever the Khazars go, people hate them. I don't hate
that's
anybody.
Right.
I'm even part Khazar through rape, since we're talking about rape. That's how I got some Khazar in me. I'm not mad at anyone. I'm only saying that if you look at who makes the porn movies, if you look at who curses Muhammad, you look at who curses Jesus, you look at who's doing it, it'll keep coming from the same demographic group. So if they openly curse Jesus and they openly curse Muhammad and they openly make fun of African religions calling everything and distorting what Voodoo or all these other religions are, right? What do they pay our black singers, actors, and entertainers? Who's telling all the black men that they have to wear a dress? Who's telling all the black women that singers that they have to be lesbians to make it? Who's telling them this? Who are the agents? Why is Dionne Warwick broke as hell after making more hit records than anybody but Aretha Franklin? I can assure you if I go and look up her management, don't get mad at me if I find the truth, right?
That's right.
So, you know, absolutely. So Lil Wayne, he's the tip of the iceberg. There was a little email that went around. It talked about a meeting that happened in Hollywood where they decided to hijack rap music. Who destroyed my cousin C. DeVore Tucker? Who owns Interscope? Who owned it that caused her to die from that from heart failure because they put so much stress on her with a $100 million lawsuit? Who has $100 million to attack an old black woman? Go figure. Go figure. Don't blame me. And no, I don't have a white robe on. And if I did, admit I was holy. You get what I'm saying? And so I hope no one, please don't distort that I'm attacking every individual, everyone all the time. But if Summer Redstone and the folks who own Viacom, who have BET, it should be called, well, it is BET, Black Neck Entertainment Television. I used to call it NET, but I came up with my new word, Black Neck. That's for the sellout trader Negroes who are the new slave trading cavaliers who are holding us down, pretending like they're leading the people, people like Al Sharpton and Messy Action and Boy Sellers, I mean, and Rosalind Kroc, all these corporate personality people who betrayed the dream of Martin Luther King and betrayed the dream of Malcolm X and Medgar Evers and Harry T. Moore. And by the way, most people aren't aware of this, but even when the NAACP does its image awards, as much as Fox News dogs black people, Fox News, the ones that sponsor all of the black image awards things. Maybe it's changed this year, but typically. So there's a relationship between the folks who make us all look like criminals, whores, and welfare recipients, and homeless, and worthless. The black elite gets the payoff. They get one day to sing and shine and hobnob with the perverted stars at the expense of the defamation of our women 365 days in a year and the criminalization of our men for a TV show. Not even a whole series. They don't even ask for a pilot. God, you're talking about even the slave traders, at least they got enough liquor, some guns to fight a war. Just one day. And that's what about 20% of the NAACP budget goes into hanging out with the stars.
Right. That's right.
So
and
that's,
you know,
that's what I say about Lil Wayne. Lil Wayne, we need to do an exorcism for Lil Wayne and all the other people. And I'll share something else with you while we're talking. Because I'm friends with the Funk Brothers. There's some old school people. Free the pain. Bring the boys home. We still got folks who can sing and dance. We need to bring them to the fore. Because when I play old black music to young black people, they love it.
Yes,
Clear Channel
absolutely.
And all these other people
that's
have
right.
systematically denied because they understand dissonant harmony makes people violent and depressed and dangerous. And they put all of this dissonant. Remember how beautiful the music was out of Philadelphia? And they replaced it with all of that garbage. So our young people are under attack. Our so-called spiritual leaders who are so interested in hobnobbing with folks even Hitler couldn't like. Yes, I said that. That they would let these folks pervert the culture and the minds of generation after generation after generation for profit. And then make the whole world think that we all walk around, ever the word is be, ho, and nigger. And the same people who made the blackface movies, I can prove it, the same people that made the cool music that made it seem as if all black folks stabbed and raped each other, it's the same group of people. They've been doing this 100-plus years. I mean, the first Soundy film was the jazz singer Al Jolson mocking black folks and black culture. The first big animated film was King Kong. King Kong, the gorilla, represented black men, which is why King Kong was banned in Nazi Germany. They understood. The first major color film was Gone with the Wind that made it seem as if we were happy being slaves. Or I can go on and on. And it's so obvious Selznick was the one who made the film, right? You know what the name sounds like. Thank you, Jesus. I'm glad y'all got that. When you keep looking at it, it keeps coming up. If it keeps coming up, Kazar, I got to call it what it is. And if you've ever read The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, it is a forgery. The question is, what is it a forgery of?
Right.
See,
that's
the trick. Well, it's a forgery. Well, what did it forge? If you ask me what it forges the Talmud. Okay? How do you like
that's
that?
Right.
It reads like it. If you look at it, it is, you know. So, and if we have to, when we get attacked, whenever one of our so-called leaders, a spokesperson like Minister Farrakhan says something that is true that they don't like, we're all called to repudiate them. Well, if their holy book says that all black folks are subhuman and we have shamefully elongated genitalia and our lips are big because we're wicked and because Ham sodomized Noah, shouldn't they repudiate their religious book because our feelings are hurt?
You know, even though it is said that the Protocols of the Learned Elders is a forgery, is one thing that isn't, and that is Henry Ford's The International Jew.
Yes.
So I think
Henry
there
Ford.
Are. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? They'll cry about Henry Ford, but they've joined forces with Henry Ford on Depo Provera and black women. I just had to go off on Press TV. I'll send you the comment. I had to debate this woman up in New York. And the comment I made, they get all mad about black folks, but DuPont sent the Zyklon B over there to kill them. Why don't you fight the DuPonts? Right? Why you attack C. DeLores Tucker? Why you attacking Minister Farrakhan? Why you attacking Alden Maddox? Why you attacking good, righteous people in our community doing the right thing? And yet, they didn't stand up to Ford. The German trucks that transported Jews to their death made by Ford Motor Company during the war.
Sure.
It's called the Trading with the Enemy Act. So, you know, it's interesting how they can line up with the folks that mass killed them and then bother us as if we had done something to them. If I mention I don't want my women profaned on television, I'm a racist. But you hanging out with a person that made cash and profit off of the killing of your own people, they're cool. Talking about some spiritual wickedness there. And we can go on and on with the Lehman Brothers making their money as cotton dealers. And look at what Lehman Markets did to us with the subprime loans. They keep doing the same game to us. So if they would do that in slavery, or enslavement, because we weren't natural slaves. Notice I keep saying enslaved because I was never an enslaved.
I know that's
our people never slaves, and my folks were not slaves. My folks ran away and went to, I didn't mention that, some of my family fought for the British, got to Canada, went from Nova Scotia to Freetown. They have the same last name as me, Short, same people. Some of us were not down for picking anybody's tobacco or cotton. I don't have stamina nor the will. So shoot me or set me free, or I shoot you. It's something like that. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's interesting that how it's the same people. And by the way, you know, Tony Martin, who just passed.
Yeah.
Remember Tony? A dear,
yes,
wonderful brother, okay, who
yes,
told
indeed.
The truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we had folks running from Tony Martin. That's how I got to know him. I wasn't afraid to speak to him. I mean, if I'm a historian. If you pull it up through the documents, what else can I do?
Right.
And so, you know, and if I look at what's happening in Congo, why is there no movement? 6-7 million people dead in Congo. Who's getting the coal plant? Who's getting the diamonds? Where are they cut? This violence in Katanga that just broke out. In case you don't know, if you remember Moise Tshombe, who fought against Lumumba, he was backed by the same folks. Sorry, I have to say it. The Khazars were down in Katanga. So they're fighting now. They must want more. It's not enough. Okay? Who's Oppenheimer? With Anglo-American owning 70% of the South African economy, where they got black folks killing each other and white folks are richer now than when black folks were under apartheid, who's got the most money? And they'll make it seem as if the black folks who, that thing is called, I forget the word, where they're hijacking electricity, make those folks out to be bad, and never ask the question, how in God's name does a community of 100 or 200,000 people end up having the majority of the control of the country? All the while we're mad at the Boers who don't have as much as this small community does. You know,
yeah.
So the same thing. And if you go to Brazil, it's the same thing. If you look at who left, if you wonder why the Cubans from Miami are so powerful, Cuban is their nationality. Some of those Cubans are, you got it, they're Sephardic. That's why that group of Latinos get so much play. They're only like less than a million of them. They get more play than the other 50 million in the country. And so it keeps coming up. And who's killing the blacks down in Miami? Right?
Wow.
So who's the mayor killing our folks with Stop and Frisk in New York? I didn't give him that name. I didn't put him in the ethnic group, but he's sure doing it. Who's the one that's letting all this killing happen in Chicago now? Rahm Emanuel, son of a terrorist?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
His little gay bathhouse going south. I mean, yes, I said it is true. So I just look and say, you know, we've got this force that's profiting off of our community, hiding behind white power, more or less the same way that the state of Israel wags America like a dog to fight all the people in the Middle East. White folks are sort of interpositioned against black folks for the benefit of a subgroup of white people. Not to say that the Anglos and the other people aren't racist and hating us too, but, you know, that's quite interesting. And and this discussion, the Nation of Islam said it, but you know what, I don't even have to deal with the Nation of Islam. I can point you to the site and I can find you all the people from the community itself that admit that black people have been targeted and viciously treated by this group of Europeans who cry victim all the time, all the while owning the liquor stores in our community. Who launders the drugs? I mean, in New York, those synagogues launder the drug money. They just did a movie that came out within the last 2 years. I have to find the name of it. And it was all of these Orthodox kids bringing over several kilos of drugs at a time. And no one would search them because they were Orthodox. You know that one kid got a suspended sentence of 6 months probation. They caught him with like 5 kilos of dope. And look at our kids who go to jail who have a joint, who may go in and never get out. That where's the center of international human trafficking and the world trade, slave trade right now, is none other than the state of Israel. It's a fact. I'm not picking. I'm not mad. If it were Nigeria, I'd tell you, because I'll go after a black person. I don't care what you look like or where you're from. If you're doing wrong, we stand against injustice. If you're righteous, I'll support you. I don't care what you look like. I love John Brown. I love Len Stewart. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I have no problem with anybody righteous that ever takes a stand. But if you're fake, if you're evil, if you're dirty, if you're hurting my people, I'm not going to look the other way. Because it looks like you got, you know, you got like a little small carpet on the back of your head. That looks like a bullseye. So, I know I'm going to get in trouble. I'm in trouble. I'll never get a job in America now.
I mean, it's
just an observation. And no, I don't want anybody to hate anybody else. I live by principle. I'll tell anyone that, by the way, my family name means money changer or money taker. I didn't give myself that name either. So if anyone calls me bigoted for knowing what my name means, don't get mad at me. I didn't learn this in school. This was forced on me by the very people of which I'm discussing as I tried to understand this Judeo-Christian thing. I went off to divinity school thinking, wow, I'm almost the same thing as those folks and learned about this Talmud and says, man, I don't think I can work with the Jesus being microwaved in doo-doo in hell I don't think I can. I can't work with this. This is now. If I said that in church, most folk would be pleading the blood, getting blessed oil, and kick me out of the church. And yet, they can be in a religious relationship and have an interfaith dialogue with folks who think Jesus is cooking in doo-doo and Mary was a whore. Now, come on now. I mean, and I mean, all these black church folks love Jesus so much, yet you'd be friends with people who put Jesus in doo-doo and cook him? I mean, I didn't write this up. I was trying to understand.
Oh,
anyway,
oh well. No, you know, we call this speaking truth to power. So it is all good.
Yeah, so that's all. That's where our young people are under attack. And by the way, you know that Rahm Emanuel's brother, he runs William Morris, and it's something else. So the Zionists completely control the talent in Hollywood, the movies, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Let Lil Wayne do a song about Rachel Corrie, the one that they ran over with the caterpillar tractor. In fact, if we wanted to end Lil Wayne's career, we could get someone to sound like him and make it about Rachel Corrie and put it out. Lil Wayne wouldn't have a contract. We could just do that, you know. I mean, all of a sudden, and he'd be saying, I ain't doing it.
Right.
So,
you know, and with that said, if we did whatever, they would just create another something. So, you know, that's what they do. But with that also said, you know, we have to make certain that we at least provide some form of resistance or some response to their madness. And that's why for June, between now and June, we will be ready to issue a boycott on some of these artists and some of these record labels, some of these companies. We've done some similar things in the past with the R. Kelly situation. We've had rallies like when he do his concert. We had people out front of the theater. And so we want to now up the ante and do what we have done historically, and that, of course, is boycott.
We should send him some cough syrup coupons. If he drank enough of it, we wouldn't have to worry about him recording anymore. I'm going to send him some NyQuil. Or some Hell Quill, whatever it is he's drinking.
That,
you know,
too. But we need to hit them in some of their pockets.
Yes, we
cover all the gambit.
I agree with you. Remember y'all shut down Stephanie Mills in Philly when she went to South Africa?
She went to South Africa, I surely do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, the same thing could be done. In fact, this is what I was talking to Reverend Pinkney. You know, we picketed the NAACP, and they called the police on us. We refused to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I told folks, why the NAACP act like white supremacists when black folks start saying, we want real leadership? And they called the cops on us to try to make us move. Yep, they had white cops with guns come at unarmed black protesters, and I had my sign. It said, Ben Jay is just for gay. Yeah, I'll send you a picture once it comes through my phone. But they were mad at us for saying the NAACP, they're traitors, and we were outside chanting, pimping. We were chanting, pimping.
They
were going crazy. And you know what? The people from the community were coming by, honking their horns in support that they thought the NAACP, they were crooks. And we need to go after. We need to tell the NAACP, we need to send them a list of people that they can't give an award to or will be in, because we had 200 people. My friend Alveda King and others and Reverend Pinkney, we had 200 people outside the Image Awards. We need to shut the Image Awards down. We need to tell the NAACP, we need to tell the Grammys that they better not honor folks. And we also need to tell the black artists not to go this year. You see, we need to do, forgive me, my father and mother, they're kind of eclectic. I grew up around really fascistic white people from the John Birch Society and the Heritage Foundation. So
right.
I sort of scare people because they hear this extreme black militancy, but the methodology sounds like someone white. I'm sorry, that's the way I was brought up. We need a contract with Black America or Africans in America that artists and other people have to sign. And if they don't sign it, we go after their records. We have Anonymous, Hack, iTunes. We just do anything to go after them. If enough of that happened, because these people, the record industry isn't making any money anymore. It's really not. They're not making money. I mean, the peak of their industry was Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was selling, back when Thriller was in its peak in 83, up to 800,000 copies a week. Now a record could be number one and sell 70,000. I mean, Michael Jackson sold 10 times that years ago, and the population's great. So people aren't buying like they used to. So all these people are vulnerable. We need to go to, you're in Philly, we can all go up like Ms. Tucker did and go to the board, the stock meetings, and play the lyrics, okay, and we can begin to make them stop. As well, we need to be pushing the government as well as what I call the confessional, congressional black caucus that we have under the UN, the United States hasn't signed. All the cultural supplementary protocols where our social and cultural rights are not recognized as a people, why haven't those devils with staff, after they've had their Congressional Black Caucus weekend where they do their orgies in the fashion show that other people don't see, but I live here in D.C., they should at least spend a month in a year looking for how to support our human rights. And if they don't, we make them do it. But we should be taking all the record companies to Geneva, going after them. You know, if we start making this stuff interesting for them, we have the capacity to make life very, very different from what it is. It's the same way you know that there are international conventions for when a policeman can use a firearm. Every time a black person is shot by the police in this country, it's a violation of an international treaty that we haven't even demanded that white folks keep their own words. Even we call Martin Luther King passive, and all Dr. King did was made people do what they had written on paper. These black necks now say don't even do what you wrote on paper because the president's black. And we can have another discussion because I went to Harvard at the same time as this sellout called Obama that everybody likes so much. And
you know, on that note, we're going to hold that point, so because that's going to lead us into our next segment, the next time when we start preparing our folks for the plebiscite. But what I'd like to do, brother, because we only have only about 15 more minutes, I'd like to get someone on. I have a caller who has a comment or a question. I want to bring them in. So, caller, you're at 8374. Did you have a comment or a question for us tonight?
No, I don't. Just listening. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Caller at 8374, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I was just listening.
Okay, I'm going to have to mute you out because you have a lot of noise going on in the background. Okay, so we're going to have to go somewhere else here. All right. But what I was saying, Brother Randy, is we will definitely go further into that whole dialogue as we prepare our folks for what we've been talking about, which is the pre-plebiscite sessions.
Yes.
So you were talking about what we need to do. But again, as we're doing that, we need to be also preparing for those next steps, you see. So that's what we want to get ready to do as well.
Well, this is sort of where I want you to meet Dr. Muhammad, who's at the East-West University in Chicago, Attorney Musa Danfodio, who's with the RAM, because they work with a group of international human rights international human rights attorneys.
Yes.
And many countries. And one of my mentors, who was one of Malcolm X's mentees, Dr. Yusef Kly from South Carolina.
Yes, I remember. I remember him.
Dr. Kly, very dear to me. You know, Dr. Kly was in Canada because he couldn't get a job in America, and he was the one that set up the autonomous area for Indigenous Canadians and what used to be the Northwest Territories, where they control the police and the schools and the curriculum. And I'm thinking, there are not a million Indians in Canada. And they have sovereignty and self-determination. And there are 50 or 60 million of us in the United States, the world's largest single ethnic nationality group with no control whatsoever over its own destiny. In fact, as I've been working with the Rebecca Project, I was asked by the policy executive, Kwame Fosu, who's also their counsel, and he said, how many blacks are in the United States? And I said, you know, when you ask me that, I need to tell you that you're going to get 5 or 6 different numbers from the government's own figures. You're going to see 11%, you'll see 12%, you'll see 13%, you'll see 14%, you'll see 15%. And then you'll see 12.5%, 12.2%, you'll see 13.2%, 13.5%, 14.1%. And the numbers range from 35 million to 45 million. By the way, the numbers don't add up when you do the math. So I told them it's crazy when you try to, and they do this. You know, whenever you try to count black folks, because there are way more of us than what they say, they don't want us to sense our powers in numbers. I mean, if you've been to Georgia lately, you know, they say the state of Georgia is 30% black. Are they crazy? Just 30%? They say the state of Maryland is 30% black. Are they crazy? Mississippi's just 37% black. Are they crazy? I mean, have they actually traveled? I mean, every population center in the state of Georgia has a black population in excess of 40%. Every single one of the people concentrating in the cities. So, you know, but, you know, and if you read their own inner notes, they said back in 2008, whites were the minority in Georgia. Then it changed in 2009. It goes back and forth. The game that they're playing is that we are a nation unto ourselves, and we've got to get that in our heads. I don't want to integrate into a gay bathhouse of white depravity in exchange for my self-determination. This is what we are essentially being told to do. And I'm not picking at anybody in our community that's a sexual minority, because I love everybody that's of African descent. And I love the rest of humanity, but I love us first. However, I'm against colonization by rich, powerful white men who decide they can be the victims and appropriate our history by calling themselves gay. And then all of a sudden, you know, Martin Luther King was gay, Malcolm X was gay. I mean, Rosa Parks probably wanted to be a man. That's why she didn't stand up if you let them interpret history for us. she probably asked to be called Robert instead of Rosa. It wouldn't get up. This is the kind of history we're going to get if we don't start saying we exist. And it's the same way I was saying Obama and Eric Holder and Susan Rice and Colin Powell, who are not African-Americans, who are strategically put in places to oppress us, the game that's being played. Or for that matter, Juan Williams. You get all these, you follow the games that are played with us, that which is what Dr. Clyde would teach us about majoritarian democracy. And that's things that you're doing, the filet, is about plural democracy, real representation. In fact, when you start talking about women not being raped, that's a foregone conclusion in a truly advanced democratic society. For folks have to run around and fight for the regulation of drugs that kill women, we're barbaric. Anglos are barbarians. I said it, Anglos are pirates. How'd they get all this stuff? They didn't do it being nice to Indians, straight and fair. These folks are dirty. Crown jewels, you think they got that paying for something? If you ever read the exchanges between the Queen of England and the Chinese, they said, we don't have anything to afford the stuff the Chinese make. That's why they started sending them dope. And same thing for our people. They had no way to break our spirit. Once Malcolm and Dr. King and Fannie Lou Hamer and Gloria Richardson riled up our people, they drowned us with all these drugs and eugenics, birth control to destroy us, and pornography, and this so-called white gay movement, which is nothing but a way to wipe us out, because the same way there's a cure for AIDS, you can go and look it up, it's a fact, and they'll let us die from it. Encourage, lock up all the men where they can't have access to women. Encourage them to do stuff so they get something. Give the women Depo-Provera so they're more susceptible to get something. And then let it go wild and make it seem as if there's something wrong with us And you know what, sister? We're like you. We're okay. There's something wrong with them. And that's why I said to folks, well, blacks, like I was saying to you, Tina Turner, we need to be like Tina Turner. If all we have is a gas card and 37 cents, we need to get the hell out of these people's house and have our own.
Well, with that said, my brother, we are going to end on that note as we prepare for the future, the next segments, because we will definitely be revisiting and also elaborating further on some of what we've talked about tonight. Dr. Randy Short, I thank you so much. Asante Sana, Madasi Pa. And again,
Jumbo,
it has
Jumbo,
been
thank you.
Indeed. And, of course, as I indicated, the Million Women Movement has added several new components to our movement, including the MWM Historical Preservation Society. And, of course, I think we've got an introduction into some of what we're going to be disseminating and helping folks to get a better understanding of when it comes to our story, because it's so important.
Yeah.
If we do not put this down ourselves and make certain that it is untouchable, for real, as you know, you'll get someone else's version or worse. So we're here to make certain that that doesn't happen. Family, I want to thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection, Liberation. Dr. Short, give us your closing remarks for tonight.
God inspire you, then inspire others. It's about us, and we're just a subset of the greater us. The more that each star shines, the greater the light is in the galaxy. Don't be afraid of someone else shining. Add your light to theirs, and we'll be brighter and greater together. God bless you.
Oh, thank you, my brother. And rest assured, we'll be talking more in the very near future about sisters such as Mother Irene, and of course, there's so many other sisters. Yes, indeed. There's so many other sisters that we have to bring greater attention to, and we're going to. So we want everyone to know that as a part of our anniversary celebration, we will be installing 12 sister saints, so that every year we make certain that specific women who have represented us and have given much, and some of them their own lives, to make certain that we were able to be here today to continue to fight. So we're going to make sure you get more information about that as we proceed on with upcoming events. And again, we want to remind you that April 24th here in Philadelphia, of course, that is always the day to fight for Mumia Abu-Jamal. We should have Sister Pam Africa on next week. We know that things will be happening here in Philadelphia in front of Seth Williams' office, which is downtown Philly, and then there's a rally that will be taking place after that. Again, we're going to give you more information about that for next week. Brother Randy, again, I thank you so very much. Are you planning to come to Philly on the 24th?
I'm planning, because Pam asked me to come. And I like hanging around Pam. You know what? That woman is blessed to survive all that. There's an aura around her of protection and safety. And any chance I get to touch it and so cover myself with it, I want it. So I'm planning to come.
All right, now. Well, I will definitely see you then, and we'll certainly be talking quite a bit between now and then, because as I said, I will probably be coming back to D.C. before the 24th, and I'll definitely let you know more about that as we get ready to further organize for the upcoming Sweet 16 reunion.
Amen. I love it. I love it.
All right, family, again, we thank all of you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, of course, and we've been talking with Dr. Randy Short, who you'll be hearing more from in the very near future. Rest assured on that. If you want more information about anything we've talked about tonight, or if you want to get involved in becoming more of a member or a support affiliate or whatever of MWM, please feel free to get in touch with us by emailing nationalmwm@aol.com. This month, we're going to also be celebrating our sixth year of bringing you this radio program live and in living color, straight, no chaser, and we will continue to do that. I'm going to tell you how you can get involved in helping to make our program even more productive and even stronger. So stay tuned for that Tune in again next week, same time, same place, here at New Day Resurrection and Liberation. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep, meaning of justice and of peace. But remember, there can be no real peace, no real Hotep, unless there's truly Ma'at, justice. Until next time, we bid you, as we oftentimes again greet you in the spirit of power, prosperity, and peace. We're out. Brother Randy, talk to you.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
See you. Bye-bye. You are.